Reservable. It's the Reservable. It's the Reservable. It's the Reservable. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule. And it's a very long time since I said those words out loud. We are now in almost July. Haven't done a podcast for quite some months. Been a little bit busy. But it feels amazing to be back at a man's house whom used to be a rather regular guest on this podcast. Haven't seen him for love nor money for most of this year, apart from on the odd occasion. But we are at the house of the very first guest who came on this podcast series when it all began back in 2016. That is, of course, Mr. Toby Clark of Walking Ibiza, which is, of course, now Ibiza Outdoors. And today we're joined by one of his wonderful cohorts, colleagues, and all-around fabulous human, Mr. Simon Reed. Welcome.
Hello there. How are you doing?
Marvellous, actually. Thank you for asking. It's very nice to have you back. I think we did that very famous episode about the Ibiza plane crash, the one and only crash that ever happened on this island, more than 50 years ago now.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. But we're nowhere near that site this time, are we? We're right up in the north.
Luckily, yes. We've decided to, stand here in the shade in amongst this beautiful birds tweeting of a morning before we set off on a fabulous adventure. Where are you taking me, Simon?
We're going to do a ride which we call the Northern Highlights, and it's such a great route because it leaves from Toby's house and it comes back to Toby's house, so that means we don't have to drag the bikes on the trailer to some place other than just leading straight from here. So people come to us. This is the community ride that we do once a week, and so people arrive here and then we take them out on this magnificent ride. And of course, as we go along, we'll be talking about all the things that we see and the beautiful views that we're going to get on this amazing ride, which takes us up to the north coast and around there to Benirás and San Miguel.
Sounds very hilly, Simon. I'm very glad that there's a bit of electricity going on in this ride because I am so out of oomph. I'm oomphed out.
Well, that's a wonderful thing about e-bikes. A lot of people think, e-bikes, you've got to be almost 90 years old to go on an e-bike. But we're finding there's a lot of prejudice with e-biking, of course. We think that they're amazing for the island because it's so hilly, as you just mentioned. But also in the summertime when it's so hot, it's a win-win because the bikes enable you to go approximately twice or 2.5 times faster than you would be on a normal bike. And so you get the lovely wind chill, if you like. Not that it's chill, but you know what I mean. You get this cooling effect because you're putting in less effort and you're getting double the cooling sort of thing. So it's a very comfortable way of riding in the summer.
Can I have that in writing, please?
Absolutely. In fact, as many people say to us at the end, they say, oh my God, I've got to buy one of these. And we convert a lot of people. If I could have a little percentage of all the people I've converted to e-biking, I think I'd be able to retire.
It's funny, actually, because another one of our podcast guests, he was in the top 10 or the first 10 episodes I ever recorded, was Roger White, who is, of course, another one of your walking guides. And he actually offered to convert my bike to an e-bike not that long ago. Oh, it's quite some years ago, actually, now. And I was quite tempted because, you know, I biked so much before I came to this island. But since I moved here, I mean, I just tootle around Santa Laria on my bike, which is a Claude Butler. I've had it for more than a decade. I shipped it over the island, especially. And you'll never, ever see another one of my very geriatric bicycles on this island, thankfully. But I love it because it's a very upright driving Miss Daisy kind of bike rather than the hunched over racer kind of vibe because I have a bad neck. And so for me, if I could just convert that into an e-bike, I'm starting to realise in my old age and I could probably do longer distances. But I just, you know, me and hills, as I realised on the Around the Island walk, which I've also done with you guys, it's just a much, much hillier place than one would imagine.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it is. We can go out on a ride when we go out on our sort of informal club rides, and we can get a 1,000 metres of altitude, or rather accumulated climbing over three hours. We're not going to be doing that today, but nonetheless, even if we were, you'd be absolutely fine. The lovely thing about e-bikes is that you dial in the power that you want. So if you don't want to exert yourself too much, then you just whip it up to turbo, and then it's a very, very easy ride. If you want to sweat, well, you can always turn it off, and then these bikes are heavy, so they're twice as heavy as a normal bike. So you can suffer a lot. But if you put it in eco, for example, then you'll get a good workout, and it's sort of the equivalent of riding a normal bike. Then we have another one called Tour, which is a really lovely one to be in. And then there's another little level there called EMTB, which is the one we recommend. But if you really, really, really start to suffer on the hills, you just put it in turbo and you just think, oh, somebody's pushing me.
I'd like to turbo all day long, actually, Simon. I'm not up for any effort whatsoever. It's been a really tough week.
Well, the lovely thing about these bikes, the ones that we've chosen, these are sort of top of the range Trek bikes with a huge battery. And that was the important thing, is having a huge battery so that we can take people out and they can use turbo for the whole ride.
Amazing.
Problems. Yeah.
Because that's my kind of bike.
Yeah, because a lot of these bikes, even some of the high-end bikes, they have quite small batteries to keep the weight down. But we just went, no, let's have a nice big battery so that we can take people out on a 30 to 40 kilometre ride and they can stay in turbo if they want to. You probably find that turbo is a little bit too much for most of the time. EMTB is a lovely one to leave it in. So you just keep that in reserve for exactly what it sounds like. That turbo charge when you need to get up a steep hill.
Okay, well, you're the expert, so I'll be guided by you, but I am just feeling immensely, well, slightly under the weather, actually. I mean, not like super ill, but definitely, yes, run down, been working a lot. So I'm probably not going to be doing too much of the hard gruel, but I'm very excited to see these beautiful locations that you've mentioned. I'm very excited to set off. Are we almost ready to go?
We are, and if you're not feeling too sort of, you're saying you're under the weather a bit, don't worry, because we've got a nice little stop in San Miguel where we can stop and have some coffees and tostadas, which we normally do with the clients anyway.
I need breakfast, actually. Perfect. Thank God for that. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was like, I'm absolutely starving.
Yeah, well, you can have a coffee or whatever you like there. That lovely little beach bar that we go to, we're just behind the beach, and it's a must. Every time we go anywhere near there, we have to go there and have a coffee. So
done. You persuaded me. Twist my arm.
And another one at Benirass if you really want.
Well, that could be the canyon stop, but let's start with the tostada.
Okay. We'll do that then. Definitely.
Okay, let's go. So, Simon, we have just made our first little stop, and yeah, you just mentioned that there's one particular sound that's missing from Ibiza currently. What is it?
Well, it is. It's the cicadas. Those noisy little devils that can drive you to distraction if you live in a forest like I do. And I'm three sides around my house is all cicadas in the summer. And they're about to start. I'm a bit of an anorak about things like this. I put in my diary last year that they started on, what are we, on the 20th now, on the 21st of June last year. And when I heard the first cicada. And so they're imminent. They're about to start. And we're not lucky like in America where they've got cicadas that only coming out every 17 years, some species. Whereas here it's every year, of course, and they go on until November even. You hear some real croaky ones at the end of the year. But we haven't heard them yet. You never know. We might.
Maybe today's the day.
Going into doing my David Attenborough thing there.
I quite like that. Keep going. Come on, David. Don't hold back.
Here we are in this lovely part of Ibiza. So let me tell you a little bit about what we're looking at now. This is a place where I always stop the clients when I'm doing a tour because it shows so much of the Ibiza hinterland anyway and how the whole island works regarding agriculture. When you look over to what's your left-hand side, looking up into the hills, you see these little terraces, these quite shallow terraces, not too high because we're not on much of an incline, but coming down and then we go over and across the Camino, and over on the other side, and you see other ones coming down from behind as well. And this is a water catchment area. So when it rains, the water falls into the hills, the water soaks into the ground, or gushes down, as we've often seen. For those of us who live in Ibiza, on the steep hills, we see massive rivers coming down hills. But that doesn't come rushing down the little gullies and that. It soaks into the ground, and over time, works its way down into the terraces. And of course there's bedrock beneath, the soil on top, the water goes down, hits the bedrock and has to keep going down because of gravity. So it automatically irrigates all of the terraces. It's such a wonderful and simple thing. So the terraces do three things. they allow this water to come down and self-irrigate, but also it slows the water down because they're flat, so it doesn't just rush down and gone and we've lost all the water. It comes down, so it slows the water down as well as it goes. And of course, because of that, it's not washing the soil away. So the soil is retained as well. So it's a wonderful way, and very ancient, of course. I mean, all over the world, we've got fantastic examples of this terracing. But when we had the Moors here, they were the absolute masters of irrigation. They would make little channels that water would go for miles and miles, or kilometres and kilometres, and go off into different fields. When I first came over here, which was 1972, I can still remember farmers using those centuries-old techniques to divert the water into the fields. You very rarely see it now. Oh, there is a cicada!
I just don't believe it!
My goodness me! There it is.
If by magic, Simon.
Yeah.
We manifested that, my friend.
That's it. That's going to drive my tinnitus mad now, crazy for the next few months.
I can't believe that's happened after that.
There you go. We've got
it. And it stopped.
And it stopped. So they're just warming up. They're just all starting to hatch. And soon, of course.
It's practicing.
And did you know that they all synchronize? Which is why it always seems like it's following you along, because they all synchronize at the same time.
There's that video, if you go onto YouTube and Google it, and if you slow it right the way down, which somebody did, it's like they're actually like in an orchestral formation, and they're actually making like a music that they can all only hear. Obviously, we can only hear this like tinnitus inducing disaster, but actually, well, I quite like it. I do like this sound personally. But if you actually go and Google, I'll send you the link. Yeah. In fact, I put it in the episode show notes for anyone that does really want to have a look. But it's absolutely fascinating that they're all just that, hearing this like sort of symphonic sound, which is very beautiful.
Ah, I must listen to that. I didn't realize that was the thing.
Okay, well, see, I've taught you something new today.
This is what we say. When we take our clients out, of course, everyone comes from all walks of life, and you might get a geologist one day or a botanist the other day, and they'll tell us stuff, and it's just fantastic. So what we, the guides, tend to be is a sort of a receptacle of all this information. Obviously, we're doing our own research of bits and pieces that we like to tell people about, but it's lovely to have people who tell you things about their speciality as well, especially if it's something like geology, which is obviously universal, doesn't matter where you are in the world, or botany, if they know something about the plants and that of Ibiza. And of course, we know quite a bit about the plants, because that's going to segue me rather nicely into what we're looking at here. Obviously, we can see pine trees everywhere, but there are something like 68 conifer trees in the world. And of course, this is just one of the type of conifers, the Aleppo pine. Yeah, cheap, nasty pine, grows really fast, soft wood, doesn't even burn properly when you want to make a fire. A bit of an invasive species, but it makes the island look absolutely beautiful. And then we have the Sabina, the juniper, the Sabina trees, these junipers here, which obviously you guys at home can't see this, but they're these wonderful, wonderful trees which they take the berries from to make gin out of course.
Woohoo!
Yes, indeed.
What time's that?
Yeah, well, if you take the berries and you crack them open, and we show it to people, and they have a sniff, and we sort of say, what drink can you think of? And they go, oh my goodness. And some of them get it straight away. But when you tell them it's gin, they go, oh, of course, it's gin, juniper berries. So those are lovely, but they're very, very slow growing. They take many, many years to grow. Very hard wood. When I was a boy here growing up, they were everywhere, huge ones. But of course, they're protected now, but in those days they weren't. And all the houses have their lovely Sabina beams, which you can't do now. You've got to import them from the mainland. But the Sabina, the juniper that you find in Ibiza is incredible. The red juniper is very hard. Fantastic for shipbuilding, of course, and beams, anything where you need the wood to last for a long time. So looking across, we start to see, what we got there? Fig tree there. Oh, we've got an almond tree there.
Can we talk about the figs? Like, yeah. Why are the figs so out of sync these days? It used to be around about August, September. They'd be dropping from the trees like nobody's business, and juicy and dark and sweet and delicious. Now, they seem to be popping out at any time of the year.
Well, an Ibithenkan friend of mine said there are 14 varieties on the island. Now, I don't know whether there are actually 14 varieties, but there are certainly different varieties here, because you get some which come out in September time, even earlier, depends on the microclimate of where that tree is situated. If it's deep in a valley and it's got plenty of water, it might be a bit earlier. So it's got a nice bit of warmth, nice sun, of course, not too much shade of the hills nearby, but not too close. So it keeps it sheltered, but at the same time gets a lot of sun and lots of water as well. You might get it to be coming out earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the really good ones, which are ready in sort of October, November. The purple ones. Those are those lovely. The green ones I find are that white sort of almost latexy stuff which gums your lips up when you're trying to eat them. Very dangerous. Don't get it in your eyes. It can really affect your eyes very badly. So don't rub your eyes if you've been playing with that.
Latex. Don't rub your eyes. You've been fiddling with those figs.
Absolutely not.
No fig fiddlers touching the eyes.
Fig fiddlers. No, absolutely not. No, you mustn't do that. Otherwise, you'll regret it. So
or go blind.
Yes, indeed. And the green ones have a lot more of the latex, or that latexy type stuff, than the purple ones. The purple ones really thin skin, which is fantastic because
you just bite straight through.
Straight through it.
So, animal style.
So I love waiting until a bit later in the year to get those purple ones.
Those are my favourites.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely they are. And of course, it's an inverted flower. You've got the petals and everything, and all the sex organs are inside the fruit instead of on
the outside. They get pollinated by wasps.
Yeah, wasp forces its way in there. I know, it's incredible.
Fascinating.
Absolutely amazing. It really is, the life cycle. So are they truly vegan?
Well,
it's always been the question, isn't it?
Pretty much, more or less. Yeah, I mean, you know, give or take. But ultimately, I think if you turn a fig inside out, as you said, you get those little pointy bits. And actually, right at the very, very tip of those little pointy bits, it does actually look like a little baby wasp.
Yeah.
Which is quite freaky.
Yeah, discard that little bit then, if you like.
No, it's very tasty.
Yeah.
And I hate wasps, so if I could eat a few and not die, that would be great.
Yeah. And the wasps here.
Little blighters. Yeah,
particularly nasty things, especially if you're out on a bike and one stings you. Not a bike, never been stung on a bike, but a motorbike, yes, would have had one ping off me and sting me on the way.
Evil.
So we got loads of them here. We got this one, got this huge one here, and I can
Big
see
tree.
Some fruit on it already.
Should we wander over and see if we can grab a little snack? I'm so hungry, I can't tell you.
I think it's going to be a little bit...
So disorganised today, really hungry and quite out of energy, but luckily I think you can solve all of those problems, Simon, just like most things.
Well, it's a little early in the year. Look at these little green ones here.
So they don't look very edible.
No, they're hard as nails.
Very,
very tiny, not even up high.
No.
Oh, there's a...
Go on, Simon, get in there, son. Do you reckon you can reach it? Do you want a leg up? Should we get your ladder out?
I don't think we're going to reach.
No, no. Even that little black one, though. He looks ready.
This one.
Yes. Him. Oh, my gosh, we share it. Half each. It's only about... Oh, no. It's tiny as well.
Look at that.
Oh, no.
Green as anything.
Yeah, but can you see what I mean by these little things on the end? Look, it looks like a little baby wasp.
Mm.
See what I mean?
Mm.
Ooh, dropped it. Any good?
Yeah, take some. Mm-hmm. It's not very sweet. It's like eating cotton wool, actually.
No, it's disgusting, Simon. It's what Kate Moss does when she eats her tissues to sort of stay full up for the day.
Yes.
Or something. Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels, according to Kate.
They're only the size of your thumb, aren't they?
I actually beg to differ today. I'm seriously hungry. Anyway, we digress.
On round, they've even got some vines here as well. I'll tell you a story about the vines, but then we go into the carob trees here.
I wouldn't mind eating some carob, actually.
Carob soup.
Is that ready?
No, not until the end of the year.
What's in season? What have you got for me? Stop teasing me.
Early. The almonds should be ready in June, but they seem to have shifted until July lately.
Well,
it obviously depends on where on the island
can we,
you
can
you
we
are.
Eat an almond today? Can you see if you can find
we'll
me one?
We'll go and we've got almond trees all along here. Let's go and have a look when we get there to see if there's any almonds that we can plunder. Scrump.
Oof, I love a bit of scrumping.
Yes, a bit of almond scrumping.
Foraging and scrumping are my two favourite words.
So, tell your story about the vines. Now, this could be a bit of an apocryphal story.
You mean like wine vines, or what are you talking about here?
Yeah, these vines. You see, what they say is, if you've got a vineyard, you've got to pay taxes on...
Nobody wants to pay their taxes in this country.
I heard that there is a law which states that if you use vines as a hedge instead of a crop...
Not a hedge fund.
It's a hedge. Exactly. It's not a crop, it's a hedge. And so you don't pay tax on any of the grapes.
Oh, that's so sneaky. I love a little reach around, a little work around.
And this is why you see quite a bit when you're out in the country, you see a lot of these fields are bordered with vines.
Okay.
And that's supposed to be the reason why, because it is a tax dodge. So for centuries, they've been tax dodging.
Yeah. Just dodging all sorts of things over here.
Yep.
Dreadful business, these Zebedenko dodgy
tax
people.
Tax evasion. Dodgers. Even here, back in the old
jammy
days.
Dodgers.
All you got to do is...
I tell you what you should do, actually, or I'd be up for, actually, is taking a little group on a wine tour of Ibiza.
Oh, we've done those.
Because there's some absolute bangers, isn't there? There's that one in San Mateo.
Yes,
we could pop out. Oof.
Yeah.
Do you have power-assisted steering on the way home as well as power-assisted energising?
I did a tour once. We haven't done one for a while now. I must.
Next time you go, you know who to invite, right?
It's a fantastic little vineyard. Absolutely wonderful, run by a lady called Antonia.
Antonia.
Can Maimo, which is a wonderful vineyard. They do about 25,000 bottles of wine a year. So not much, really, when you think about it. Nothing like Can Rich, which, of course, does many, many more. And the Hibiscus brand, of course, which everybody knows about. But not many people know about the Can Maimo. They don't sell their wine in supermarkets. It's direct sale to restaurants. Mm-hmm. They have one in particular, a red, which I absolutely adore, because how they filter out all the grape skins when they've done all the pressing and everything and all the juices coming out and the bits that might come through, traditionally they have used branches of the thyme bush, and they shove it into this box and have the wine run through this wad of thyme, and that of course gives a lovely flavour to the wine as well, a peppery flavour at the end of it. It's one of those tastes where you either really like it or you think, oh no, something's very wrong with this, and you can't take it.
Like a natural wine.
Yes, indeed. Well, the EEC heard about this, the EEC wine gurus or the wine police, and they said, you can't do this. It's got to be wine, nothing but the wine, or grape, nothing but the grape. And
I'd quite like to work for the wine police. I think I'd be quite good at that job.
Yes, if you had to go around and taste the stuff.
Confiscating it all.
Yeah.
Just accidentally storing it for a bit too long.
Well, what they did was once they found out that they were running all the wine through this wad of thyme and imparting the thyme flavour, they said, no, you can't do that. You've got to stop it straight away. It can only be the grape. You can't start adding other things into it. Those are the rules. And Antonia just said to them, here in Ibiza, we've been making wine like this for 2,000 years. And they went, oh, it's traditional then.
So, can't argue with a bit of culture.
So that was that. So she's allowed to carry on doing her thing. It's a lovely
tour. Do you know what she puts in it?
What she puts in...
The wine, so what's the added extra ingredient,
just
the secret?
Just that thyme. It just takes the flavour from the thyme as it runs through this box full of thyme. So it just goes through and takes on that flavour, which is, I think, is a fabulous additive.
I want to try it.
Yeah, it is. It is really nice. You can go to the shop and buy it directly from her.
Is that on our route?
Not today.
Oh, bugger.
A little bit too far away. But I did a trip there once with a bunch of guys, and it was a walk with wine, and then ending up at the bodega. And so we started at the church, where I had far too many bottles of wine in my rucksack, and not many people turned up. And so I had this
clinking along,
clanking, clunking. I gave everybody a cup. I said, keep your cups. And we're going to start off with a bottle of wine, because I don't want to carry all this stuff. So we poured out the wine and got rid of the bottle. And so we'd had a couple of glasses or paper cups, plastic cups full of wine before we even started. And we did a tour of the vineyards of San Mateo. Not that there's many there, but there's a few running around. And then I'd get another bottle out and let's try some white now. And we did that. And oh, now let's have a bit of rosé. And we tried that. In the end, we were staggering to get...
I'm so sorry.
To get back. Hay fever time. So when we got back to the church, we could barely stand.
How very holy.
Because we'd shared, I think it was, we'd shared six bottles of wine between six people. And so we were also a bit squiffy. And then I said, right, so we're off to Can Maimo now. So off we went for even more wine. And she puts on such a great spread. Because they have all local produce there, whether it be honey, olive oil, bread, olives, all that kind of stuff. And also the embutidos, the absolutely wonderful sausages that we get here as well. She serves all of that kind of stuff, the butifarras, and so on, salchichon. Which is just wonderful. You sit there, you get drunk, you eat until you're absolutely stuffed, and then you got to get home.
Minor detail. That is when the support truck comes to fetch,
well,
you know.
That's it. And one day, Toby was doing, a walk, quite a legitimate walk.
Illegitimate?
No, well, as was the
sounds like Toby.
As was the illegitimate one. His was the legitimate walk because there's no alcohol involved. And he came and joined us. He went, "Oh, Simon's in Canmaimo. I'll just go and see how things are going and see how the clients are." And he came in. We were all lashed, all of us, falling about, laughing, having a great time. And he went, "Oh," I said, "go and sit down, have some wine with us." And so he did. And then in my state, I started filming and posting. I can't remember in those days whether it was Facebook. It wouldn't have been Instagram because I wasn't Instagrammed up then. But I was Facebooking. That must have been Facebooking. And I put a little video up and swept of me sweeping the table with the camera. Of course, Toby's wife, Belinda, saw it and realised where he was.
Oh, no.
So Toby got found out.
Rumbled. The worst possible way on socials.
Oh, it was great. And it was instant because he sort of got the phone call straight away. Oh, that's where you are. So, yes, be careful, kids, when you post on social.
That's actually how Toby and I had one of my favourite adventures in Formentera. I saw on socials he was in Formentera, and so it was I, and he was on an e-bike, and he'd just come from the port and was sitting in the restaurant right behind where I was laying on the beach. Yeah. And I was on my own having a bit of a 3-day recharge, like needed to sort of get away from working world. And anyway, I texted him and I was like, "Oh my God, are you in the so-and-so restaurant?" He was like, "Yes, shall I order another steak and a bottle of red?" And I was like, "Yes, please." So obviously we had that, but it was one of those restaurants where they bring you over a bottle of homemade hierbas at the end.
Oh, yeah.
So of course we didn't just have one chupito, we drank the entire bottle. And then the people next door to us on the next door table got up and left without drinking theirs, so we drank that as well. Wonderful. That was it, game over. Yeah. I lost my flip-flops.
Yeah.
Crashed my bike on the way home.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
just one of those. Oh. It was a lot of fun and one of my favourite Toby walking Ibiza stories, really.
Oh, well, I've...
God knows how he got back to the port on that bike. Oh, I do not know.
Well, I had a similar thing years ago, just to keep it very short, but two of us, a friend of mine, a Dutch lady, we went to Calabasa in a boat and drank all day long at the Calabasa club thing. And then we came back on the boat, but then we had our bicycles. And I, being the gentleman, thought that this we're in San Antonio, so I'll make sure she gets back to Calatarida, was where she was living, and I'll go back to San Antonio. So I went well out of my way. She was so drunk, her Christian Dior sunglasses fell off the bike, and she reversed over them.
Oh no!
And we got back, and it just got worse and worse because I hadn't got any lights, and now it was getting dark. And so she lent me this one light, which was like a candle, which I clipped to the handlebars. I don't even remember riding home, but I did actually get home okay. And then, so she was safe, I was safe. And we shared notes the next day of how what a crazy day it was. But yeah, absolutely. But
a calamity, Simon.
She lost a pair of lovely sunglasses. Oh. But to ride backwards over your own sunglasses.
If we had a euro for every pair of sunglasses that were lost or damaged on this island, I think we would be millionaires. If it was like, say, 10% of the value of said sunglasses. I mean, it's ridiculous. If it's not on a boat, because you don't have the string that goes, you know, like you're sailing or whatever. I mean, I've just had, it's ridiculous how many pairs I've lost. I probably lost about $5,000 worth of sunglasses. Glasses in 13 years.
Well, it Toby, who you just met up at the base camp there, he's lost a lot of sunglasses. I've been quite okay. I've been quite lucky. But
go for the sporty ones. Look at you. You got your sporty sunglasses on.
Yeah, hopefully they don't
wrap around.
Yeah, hopefully they don't fall.
A bit more
off.
Sensible.
Yeah, it's these other ones where you put them on your car seat and you get in the car, and then you crush them.
Or chuck them on your towel, go for a swim, come back, and then sit on them.
Yeah, or they're gone. Or somebody pinches them.
Somebody nicks them. Well, that used to happen to me in space a lot. I had some nice sunglasses and I would always get them robbed out of my handbag or obviously be a bit tipsy and put them down for 2 seconds, turn my back and they'd obviously be gone.
And it's a complete liability if you haven't got a pair of sunglasses in the summer here, isn't it, really? I find
it's dangerous, actually, for your lenses, of your eyeballs.
Absolutely, yeah, it is. Just going off the subject a little tiny bit, but staying sort of on the subject. Because I grew up here, I've actually lost pigment in my eyes.
Oh, no.
Because of not wearing sunglasses when I was a kid.
I thought you were a vampire.
No. Otherwise, I'd be shriveling up and hissing right here, wouldn't I? And ending up
in
a puddle.
Well, that's later, Simon. That's what happens at the end of the bike tour, no?
Yeah, something like that.
Climb into your coffin to recharge.
Indeed. Yeah.
Right, and on that note, shall we vamos?
Yes, indeed. We're going to...
turned into sort of a drinking tour.
It did. It does, yes.
I liked it, though.
Well, we're going to start heading up into the hills now. You can see these lovely, lovely rolling hills. They get a bit steeper later, but we've got some lovely, beautiful caminos to follow as we climb and climb and climb. And you'll be certainly praising the e-bike. Yeah.
I love your guiding voice, Simon. I've missed it.
Oh, you have to come
so
on more
infused.
Of them.
It's a thing of magic. So thank you for inviting me today. Yeah, I'm very, very, very happy to be here.
Oh, you're really welcome. We've been wanting to do this for quite a while, haven't we, the e-biking podcast?
And now we are.
Yes, indeed. Plenty more to see.
Let's go. So we are at our second little pit stop, Simon. We are overlooking...
Well, we're not overlooking Santularia.
This is what I thought, which is embarrassing because that's my hometown. But I swear to God, I thought we were there for a minute.
Coming in from a different angle, yeah. We're not. This is San Miguel. This is the pueblo, the San Miguel, or San Miguel, of course, depending on which era you belong to. Because, of course, before Franco died, it was all San Miguel. It all had the Spanish names. And, of course, in 75 when he died, we went back to all the old names, the original Catalan names, at least, of Sant Miquel. So this is the town of Sant Miquel, and we can see the church right on top, of course, where churches normally are placed, which is why you saw it as Santularia, of course, because the beautiful church up there, as we know, is absolutely fantastic. But there's an interesting thing here. You can see the church. Well, we're looking at it from the front, the entrance, even though it's, you know, quite a way away, kilometre and a half away or something. We can see the front of the church beautifully painted white with that paint that's made from the limestone of the island, the calce, as they call it, the calce paint. But it's the sides. Oh, got a car coming. So as you can see, the sides are, well, this side at least is left in the natural stone. The left hand side will also be of natural stone, and the behind the church, the back wall is also of natural stone. And the reason for this is that will be very apparent later on, but I'll explain why now, is that the church can be seen from the sea, because the San Miguel Valley goes all the way down to the sea, to the San Miguel port, the port of San Miguel, which is where we're going to have the tostadas.
Are we not going into the little town?
Oh, we can do if you want to.
It's up to you.
It's not on our route, but we...
You're the master of today's ceremony.
If you're desperate for a coffee and a thing, we can go there first if you like. It's up to you.
No, the port sounds beautiful.
Good. So when the Moors were ejected from Ibiza, and the widely recognised year of that was sort of 1234, round about then, when the invading Christian Catalans pushed the Moors out and claimed it. So the Moors would come back as pirates. And as they would come back, they'd come in, maraud, they would take young girls, they wanted young girls, and they would take slaves. So they would also take anything that they could, because they still regarded the island as being theirs, of course. They'd had it for quite a few hundred years.
Well, so, you can't just wander in and, like, take some young girls as a slave.
Absolutely. And one of the stories there, just going off on a branch for a second, is that when you look at the old Ibithincan dresses, these voluminous black dresses, and they were supposed to be for a reason. The reason was to make the young girls look older so that they wouldn't be taken by the invading Moors. So yeah, so they disguise themselves. So from a distance, they go, oh, she's too old to take. I know. So they dress in these big voluminous things, shapeless dresses. So what they would do is go up and down the coastline in their boats, and if they saw a house painted bright white, they'd say, oh, wealth there, because it used to cost quite a bit to paint your house in this calc-based paint. So what they would do is they would only do the wall that showed to inland, not towards the sea.
Fascinating. Look at that and the fascinating facade facts of the day. Another car just gently cruising by.
Yeah, and that's right. And so not only did they save some money, because there was, in this case, three sides they didn't have to paint white, but also it blended the church in to the rock and to the trees of the hill. But this side, because it wanted to be nice and flashy, of course, because it's beautifully clean and pure, because it was because it's religious nature. So this side was painted white, and this was carried on into all the houses around Ibiza too. If you have a look around the houses in Ibiza, the old ancient ones, you may see some which are painted white, where it shows inland, and the bit that shows towards the sea is left as natural stone to blend in, so it doesn't draw attention to themselves.
That's so interesting, because I got my interior of my house painted recently. It was like €1,000, and it was like, it's not a massive house inside. So I was like, I thought that was a lot of money, but I didn't realise that the paint is you know, it's very expensive.
Well, the modern paints, of course, especially, I mean, now we've replaced them with polyurethane paints. And of course, if you get a polyurethane paint, which has got the anti-mold element in it, then that can be twice as much as a normal cheaper bin of paint or bidon of paint. But of course, in the old days, with the calcium based paint, you didn't need any of that, because it breathed very, very well, much better than even the micropore stuff that we get today. But also, nothing can grow on calcium based paints. It's so corrosive, which is why abattoirs and dairies and hospitals used to always be painted with that white wash, that calcium-based paint, because nothing can grow on it. So it kept a sterile atmosphere. Nothing, you didn't have mould spores floating around inside the buildings. In the 70s, when we switched from calcium-based paints to plastic paints, everything went black, because we sealed up the walls inside and out, because the early paints didn't have the pores to make the walls breathe. So they just sucked up moisture from the ground, and then it burst through eventually, black everywhere. So we had to paint either the inside of the house with pintura plastica, the plastic paint, or the outside, but never both. Now we do both sides, because the technology's moved on. Yeah. And then we've got these micropore paints which can breathe and all that. So that's a little brief history of paint on the island.
Well, thanks for that, Simon. Yeah, if anyone's thinking about doing a bit of DIY this weekend.
Yes, indeed.
Love it.
So, yes, it can be quite expensive. You get the top-notch paints nowadays.
Which is what it was like one pot was like £150 or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Madness, but it was anti-mould.
Exactly, and that's why, yeah.
What was worth every penny and more. I mean, there's nothing worse than having a mouldy house, which this island is probably one of the most sort of humid, I think, that a lot of people come here and they just don't really quite get it. You know, the fact that you have to vacuum pack your clothes and put them away for the following season, because everything goes mouldy on this island. It's quite unbelievable.
Oh yeah, you leave your belts or leather jacket in the cupboard in wardrobe, and you come back, it's covered in mildew. What I do is I leave all my cupboards open. I've got sliding doors on my wardrobes, and I just leave them open all the time. In fact, my main wardrobe, I don't have a front to it at all. And it's just so that it can breathe. Yeah,
that's a top tip from the top, Simon. I like that.
Yeah, either that or get an air conditioning unit, which will, of course, keep... dehumidifier. I run dehumidifiers as well. Lots of dampness on the island, of course. Much.
And on that soggy note, where are we, shall we?
Yes, we'll move on then. Yes.
So we're interrupting this episode just for a little advertisement / fundraising GoFundMe appeal, because Simon and I, the last time we worked out and we saw each other one-to-one was when we did the Around the Island boat adventure episode. And halfway round, what happened?
Well, we got very wet, didn't we, and cold. And you were
a bit grumpy.
Yeah, well, you were on the wet side. You were actually protecting me from the spray.
It felt that way, Simon.
I was quite okay. I was kind of sort of snuggling in under your
my armpits.
The lee, as they call it, in your lee, and you were getting very soaked. It's true. I remember you were wearing a hoodie or something, and it was just wet through like a wet towel, wasn't it, at the end, and very, very cold. Yeah, that boat was...
I had wrinkly bits.
Well, that boat was more like a lake boat than a sea boat. And so, yeah, that was... you needed a really flat day to go out in that boat.
It was choppy AF.
It was a little bit choppy, yeah. It was enough to get the waves to spray over you. I had a feeling at some point... Because the first bit was okay until we turned round the island a bit where the wind was coming in from the port side, which is where you were sitting, and it was just spraying over you. Every wave that we hit, you got drenched, and I was sitting there going, well, because the steering's on this side, otherwise I'd offer to go on that side.
I'd take one for the team.
Yeah, but
yeah, right.
No, but you took one for the team instead, and I could see your spirits just draining out of you. The normal bouncy Joe that we all know and love, just disappearing, and this grumpy person, this grumpy bundle sitting next to me,
grumpy
wet, soggy bundle. So in the end, we sort of gave up, didn't we? Just gave up. And
we certainly did. But the most heartbreaking part of all your incredible expertise and knowledge and wisdom that you shared was after Es Vedre, the audio just vanished. There was no more audio or descriptive. You know, we didn't finish the podcast because we got half a round. And after that, and I remember, like, you recorded me touching that rock, which I've always been a dream of mine since I moved here. It was like the most incredible moment of my entire life. And it just doesn't exist. It doesn't exist on the podcast. It's heartbreaking.
And you didn't get the €3,000 fine for touching the rock either.
I didn't, so I didn't do it anyway. That's just a lie. Oh no, I would never do that. Oh no, Simon. But the most fascinating part was that you told me that there's like another Es Vedre almost as big or bigger underwater next to it.
Sabota.
So we need to go back and redo this.
Yeah, one nautical mile to the north of Es Vedre is Sabota, which is an underwater mountain, which is wonderful. It just scrapes the surface of the sea. Very dangerous because in calm waters you can't see it. You go straight over and it rips the arse off your boat. So you've got to be very careful. If there's a little bit of waves, you can see a bit of a ripple, but even then you might miss it. I have to find it on a calm day. I have to use a GPS to find the damn thing.
It's ripping asshole ripple. Much like a raspberry ripple, but different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what it is this beautiful, it's a great diving site. So if we do it, then you must bring snorkel and
if,
mask.
When, yes, Simon, when we do it.
Snorkel and mask, because it just is this underwater mountain. And it is roughly the shape of Vedra as well. And in the same orientation, more or less, too. Sort of high at one side, then going down lower. And you can swim down and into it. Beautiful cavern in there as well. And they have lots of fish, which you don't see in many places of Ibiza. They actually have... barracuda there, which you don't see often around Ibiza. You see them in various deep water places where there's rocks, sandy bottoms. You don't see much around there, but it's perfect for that. There are a few more places around the island too, good dive sites as well, where you see barracuda, but that one's famous for it. Lots of octopus there as well. You go down and play with the octopus there. Lots of fish, because of course it's on a sandy plain. It's just this rock in a sandy plain, but very dangerous for boats, yeah.
Okay, so the moral of the story is that we are going to go back and redo the second half and record Es Vedre round to Talamanca in a clockwise direction to re-record the second half of God only knows what happened to the other part of the audio. I'm not going to touch Es Vedre, it's going to be fine. But if anybody wanted to join us, ideally a couple, or two people, or two singles, or maybe somebody wants to go on a romantic date and come and just join the fun of, you know, having a few beers and a bit of a picnic. I'll bring the picnic. You can do the driving. I'll bring some nice fizzy pop for us to have a little bit of fun and games. And then we'll record the second part of the episode. So we want two people to come and pay the cost of the fuel. How much is that going to be, Simon, for the entire round the island for that boat for the day?
The entire round the island would be probably about between 50 and 70 litres. whatever the litre prices will be then.
We need to put a stamp on it. Massimenos, how much do you think that's going to be?
How much is petrol at the moment?
I don't know. 140
or something. 140 times 70, to be sure.
It's like $120.
Something like that.
Okay, so two people are going to chip in like 80 quid for some drinks and food as well. Yeah. And then we're going to have a really, really fun day going around the entire circumference. In fact, let's just call it around $99. Let's say that. $99, yeah. Euros.
Because there'll be four people in the boat. That'll make it a bit heavier, so that means a bit more fuel. That's the thing with boats, is that the faster you go, or the heavier the boat is, the more fuel you use. But it's quite an economical boat. It's a 50-horsepower boat, so it doesn't gobble up fuel like some of these boats. I mean, I've seen some boats where you go out of Santa Ilaria and you're Tagamago and back, and you've used up a couple of hundred euros of fuel. You know, 50 euros just to get out of the port.
I felt like we were in a sort of skidoo on a mogul field there last time. It was everywhere, ring, pong, ring, pong, ring, pong, and every pong was a wave of water over my face. So it's just like, this is going to be a much more relaxing experience than the previous episode.
Yes, it's a more comfortable shaped boat.
Can I have that in writing, Simon?
Let's cut through the water.
I want a contract sign.
Yeah. Flat versus V. So all you boaters out there, you'll know what I'm talking about. You get a flat bottom boat, obviously, it's like a palm of your hand going slap, slap, slap on.
No one wants a flat bottom.
But if you do that with your hands and make a V, it cuts through the water better. So
you're going to slice and dice our way around the island.
Absolutely. It still could be bouncy.
Bouncy's okay, but flat slapping, not so much.
But you won't get as wet.
If that's the case, tell you what, why don't we do this in August? Because actually it'll be warm. We didn't do it in August last time. It was ice cold and it was wet, and I literally froze my wotsits off. So I'm saying, let's aim, I don't know if you're around, at the end of August, and we get two people to come and join us. They just have to pay the cost of the fuel and a little bit of fizzy pop, and the jobs are good.
Yeah, sounds like a good thing. Yeah.
You're such a sport, Simon. I love you, and I'm very excited to do this together again.
Yeah, it'd be good fun. Going out in a boat is always fun.
Going out with you is always fun.
Yeah.
Well, we just came off a very sweaty, massive climb to get to where we're stopping off now. I've kind of got my breath back because I stopped to do a bit of filming, but that absolutely mullered me.
I can hear you panting away. It's a good hill, that. Well, it's two hills, isn't it? One after the other. And if you go up at the speed we were going at, of course, yes, you have to put... You see, people think that going out on an e-bike is for geriatrics. And yet, no, it's not, because you can dial in as much or as little assistance as you want. And you come to some hills, of course, which are huge, like those ones we just came up. And we've got another one coming up on the other side of the San Miguel Valley, if you like, over on the other side where the hotels are. That's a good climb up there. It's a beautiful route. Really, really nice, with fantastic views. But you've got to work for it. As simple as that. If you go slower, it's easy. But if you want to put some down, and sometimes you just get so into it, the endorphins are flowing around the body and you're feeling great and the heart's pumping away and you're not absolutely drenched in sweat because it's an e-bike. So you're putting effort in, but you're not suffering as much as you would be doing 3 or 4, 5, 6 kilometers an hour and drenched in sweat and shaking in the knees and everything. So the lovely thing about e-biking is that you dial in what you how much you want to work. I love it.
No, that was epic, but I wouldn't say that I'm not still bathed in sweat. It was woof, full power, no shower. So where are we?
Well, we're in San Miguel. We are over by the Pirate Tower itself. And this is a particularly beautiful pirate tower, and also one of the few that we can go inside without breaking doors down and things like that.
Only the police tape that exists between
the tape. Yeah, there's police tape all over the place, and I'm having a bit of a think about this. I haven't seen it in the news, but I wonder if somebody's fallen from this rocky escarpment where this pirate tower, or the pirate towers, are inevitably mounted on good viewpoints with fantastic views. I mean, we can have a little walk along as we're going, so we can just have a
Let's not speculate and, make up fake news there,
no,
Simon.
No, absolutely not. But I just wonder why in this bit here, why there's tape everywhere. I'm going to have to look that up on the local newspaper and see.
I haven't been here since like an illegal rave that I came to in about 2016, which must have been about, 9 years ago now. Crazy.
It's lovely. It's lovely. And inside on that second layer there, there's a dome inside. And if you get into the middle and you speak, it reverberates around and sound comes from all over the place.
Let's do that.
And also another little bit about it is that you can get to a point here where you can speak across from one side to the other. You can start hearing it echoing already. And be careful here because the steps are...
I'll take my sunglasses off. Okay, I see now.
The steps are steep, very steep. There's some blankets in here. But straight away you can hear this.
Ooh.
Very strange echoing effect going on. Wow.
Oof. Oh my god. Shit. Just Simon. Woo!
And if you stand right in the middle, which I'll just find the focal point.
The sweet spot.
The sweet spot's about here. Just about here. If you move yourself.
Just about here. I sound like a Dalek.
There.
A Dalek.
There.
A Dalek. A Dalek.
Isn't it weird?
I feel like R2-D2.
The other thing
gone wrong.
This place has is if you go over there on the other side of the dome, opposite me,
okay,
put your ear to the wall.
Ooh, I love to put my ear to the wall. Hello, Simon, are you awake?
Now, isn't that amazing? the sound travels completely over this parabola. And you pick it up, but you have to be opposite each other. But if I go here, you go back to where you were. There.
Okay. Yeah. Hit me.
And now, of course, now paralyzed me now. You can't hear me as well.
Not as well, no.
But if I keep walking back here, you tell me. You tell me when it starts to get back there?
Yeah.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm here, but I'm very good. I can hear you perfectly.
Isn't that tremendous? Then the next bit, just keep
it
on the
lights. Ooh. Oh my god, there's more. We're going up again, are we? What's going on outside? Ooh, that's Benaras in the distance. Look at that. Oh god. Don't we want to do this? Me? It's a little tiny hole for a little tiny mole. Oh god, Simon. This stairs are. How did you die right before your holiday? This summer, Joe Yule. Oh, yes. Oh, wow. Oh, look! Oh, golly.
And the views up here are outstanding. That island there used to be, that flat one, used to be a leper colony back in the day.
I should probably move there.
Of course, all the buildings have gone because they would have been made from wood so that when the people died, they just burned the building to get because they didn't understand what leprosy was all about. So they'd burn the buildings. They would have been made of wood. And that's where they would have been exiled to.
That's nice. So that's what a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, that's Leper Island.
Did you have a little residency over there?
Not in this lifetime. Now, up on there on that flat bit you see, there's a house right up there. There's a helicopter pad there, which belongs to the Hacienda Hotel, which was Ibiza's first ever five-star hotel. And because the roads were so bad back in the 70s when it was built, they used to helicopter people in, either from the mainland or from the airport, and land them right there. That little building you see there was actually a bar for them to have a drink while they were waiting for the helicopter to come.
That's so cool.
And if you go there, you can still see the circle and the H part painted on the ground. So, yeah, that was one of Ibiza's first helicopter pads. Over here, we can see millionaires.
The helicopter. Oh, look! Do you know what? That is the spot, isn't it? Where that dude... So when you come down from San Vicente, or San Miguel, sorry, that's it, isn't it? You can see that.
Well, technically, it's not an island.
It doesn't look that nice at all, though.
No. It's not really an island because it's joined with a little causeway. But apparently worth 28 million.
It's very concrete, blocky, horrible.
Let me get this right. Apparently, it cost him 28 million, but he spent millions on it, and now it's worth 75 million. Apparently, belongs to Mikhail Prokhorov, who controls all Palladium in Russia. Uh-huh. We haven't seen him for a few years. Nor his boat, which is also called Palladium.
Oh, really? What do you think's happened to him?
Just not around anymore. Just one of those things, isn't it?
Not around anymore. Do you know something?
Well, he's a Russian guy. So he's in hiding, probably. And Palladium, which you could track around the world using the internet, you can't track it anymore. It's the last time I checked, anyway, it was gone, completely gone. They turned off the transducer, the transmitter thing.
So but we can see the Benaras Rock?
We can see the Benaras Rock. We can see Benaras itself. That's where we're going next. Here's the lovely port of San Miguel. We're going to go through behind the hotels, climbing through these hills, up and around the back there, and then down into Benaras.
I do that walk, actually, from San Miguel to Benaras when I want a real sweat shower in the summer, just a real workout detox vibe.
Yes, and of course you've done it already on the Round the Island walk.
Yes, indeed I have.
Yeah, you've done all this.
I know that walk very well indeed, and I absolutely hated it when I had 16 kilos on my back, but these days on e-bike it's a piece of cake.
And unsupported in those days as well. You had to carry everything yourself.
Yeah, no shit.
Moon Beach over there, right in the distance. You can see right over there, Moon Beach. Of course, this time of the year, we're coming up to solstice, so the sun comes right down here, comes slicing down here onto the horizon just over there. We take kayaks out from San Miguel, actually, and take them round and do a little crystal ceremony out there.
I've done that one.
You have?
Yeah. In Tabi, yeah. Threw the manifesting rock overboard.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Throw all your nasty thoughts away with your crystal. And then and you watch the sun go down. And sometimes, only sometimes, you see the green flash as the sun goes behind the horizon.
Like a Dunlop moment.
But you very, very rarely see the green flash. Has to be super clear. Amazing. But there you go. But what a beautiful viewpoint.
Stunning.
We're going past that. See that radio mast up there?
Yeah.
That's where the path goes, past there, and then down the other side.
Marvellous. How long to go then, Simon?
What, for the whole ride?
Yeah.
Or just now? Well, it depends on how many times we stop and talk. But we should be back in about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Normally, without all the stops and all the podcasting, we can knock this off in about 3 hours. 4 hours if everybody wants to know everything about everything. And we do a lot of talking. And then, of course, you always read the crowd. If they want a lot of information, then we tell them more about stuff. And sometimes they want to drink on the beach as well. And of course, that can run into, all afternoon. That's always fun. The unexpected.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed. So, basically a tale of however long it takes, it takes.
And this is the other part of the little story about the... because this is a watchtower for the pirates. We were talking about the pirates down that bank there. Well, of course, if you look over there, because we can see the church from here. Mm-hmm. You see on the hill right over there, you can see the church. Well, you can't see it very well because it's all blended in. But you can see the bell tower. See, that is painted in white. So you can just see it. But you see how it blends in. Imagine it painted white. So the houses at the sides, you can see there. But they're all just on the top there. You can barely see it. And that's where they'd be looking up, straight up there, straight up the valley, to see if anything was going on. And the towers were to have an early warning system when you saw any suspicious-looking boats coming past. They'd build a big fire here. And then you'd have people up in the hills who would then light a fire. And then the next tower would light their fire. And then the church bells would start ringing.
Oh, wow.
And then before you knew it, they said within an hour, the whole island was alerted to the threat of pirates. So it was a very, very good system that they used. And then they would send a garrison to go and repel them. But of course, the pirates knew that they only had a few hours on the ground before they were had to leave because they'd be overwhelmed.
Interesting.
But the early warning system worked very well. That's why we have so many of these pirate towers.
Amazing. Right, let's see if we can actually make it down without breaking our legs or our faces.
Yep. Just put your hands on the walls, lean into the walls. That's always a good thing. And when you get to this bit where your head can be bashed, put your hand above yourself so you know where the wall is.
She says, descending with a recorder in one hand and a phone in the other. So, we've just arrived to the little hippie hangout that is Benaras Beach, where the drumming goes off on a Sunday night. As you can probably hear in the background, the reggae is happening in the market. Simon, How does it feel to have come down that whopping great big hill?
Well, absolutely fine coming down it. We've got to go up it now.
Amazing.
Well, that's the thing. It's a nice steep hill, but the bikes have got good brakes, so that's all you need. So we've got to go, well, we're going to have a little look around the market as well.
I think we should go and buy each other a friendship bracelet, Simon, to mark our third episode, a hat trick of episodes.
Yeah, go and see what they've got. Oh, they've got some VW camper vans for sale over there.
Ideal.
Miniature ones, yeah.
Do you know what? I do need to get someone a birthday present. I might have a quick whiz in.
Yeah, we'll have a little look around. But then afterwards, of course, we're starting to head back towards Toby's house now. So we've got the big hill, the big monster hill to go through. Then
what, the bigger than any monster we've conquered yet.
Massive hill. Yeah.
I hate you, actually, Simon. It's official.
And then curve off into the countryside. Some nice little, a little trickle through the countryside. Some nice little farmyard, farm paths to go along, popping out. And then, actually, we've still got quite a bit of lovely stuff to come up.
Ooh, that sounds a bit more promising than another sweat shower.
Yeah, and going inland now, starting to move away from the coast, so into the hinterland of Ibiza. Where all I can promise is lovely caminos and finishing about no more than an hour anyway.
On the home straight,
heading back to base camp.
Marvellous. Let's go and see what we can score in the market, Simon.
Yeah, you never know. They've got lots of clothes for sale as well, haven't they? Lots of robes and clothes and shirts.
We should get you a nice caftan, darling.
Ah, caftan. Bit warm for this time of the year, perhaps. Good for winter. But
you to waft around in by your swimming pool.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, might find something. What else have they got? Oh, there's some right there behind you. Yeah, that's
exactly what I was referring to.
Ah, there we go.
I can see you in that one right there, actually.
Yeah, drifting around.
It's got your name written all over it.
Yeah, looks like it stopped the sunburn too.
Right, let's whiz in and then whiz off.
Okay.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel.
Welcome back.